Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Seth is happy already on a Wednesday.
Just as I work
Not
my
even
way
6:01 yet.
As I work my way through the office, I'd gotten to the episode where Michael Scott is doing a speaking tour of all the branch offices, and one of his things is he comes in saying, "Good morning, Vietnam." Yeah. That was, for kids, I guess anybody really younger than 40 that doesn't know this, that was one of the most annoying things that's happened in American history. It was after the movie Good Morning, Vietnam came out, people would yell, "Good morning, Vietnam."
Yeah, I think they were really funny.
Yeah.
It was the Houston We Have a Problem.
It
was of
even
movies.
It was way more annoying than what were the Budweiser frogs do?
I forget, but they were annoying too. There were the two guys.
No, I got to do that for the next 2 weeks. Oh, damn it! I still every now and then out of nowhere, I'll go to pick up the phone and I'll have this urge to go like, "What the?"
That was like 1998.
It was so much fun. It was so stupid and so much fun.
Oh,
I don't think
man.
We'll ever have that again. Our innocence is lost.
Because
at some point now it'll turn political. You know what's going to happen? Somehow they'll turn that into a white supremacy thing. Just like I can't do okay anymore, apparently. Because now all of a sudden I'm a Nazi.
Yeah.
I can't play the circle game.
You cannot.
Because
no,
I'm trying to subjugate people. Let me hear this. What's up?
Yeah.
Bud.
Oh, that's the bud.
That's the bud.
Bud.
Nice.
Bud.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not the what's up. Is the two guys
bud.
Yelling at each
yeah,
other?
Yeah, those were the bullfrogs.
Then yeah.
Jonesy's right. Those were the bullfrogs. Yeah. But the what's up was separate. But then they did meld the two at some point.
Did they?
And then I think the bullfrogs started saying what's
they
up.
They started
at
screaming
point.
At each other
yeah.
too. Okay, cool.
I was doing a lot of anti-inflammatories back then.
Yeah,
that was my drug experience. Lots of Indocin, lots of bleeding stool. Yeah, right. Ooh, things were crazy back in the 90s.
Trying to manage these knees.
Yeah.
How are you today, my friend?
I feel great. I got 9 hours of sleep. I think I decided last night after we had a retirement party for a couple of our beloved employees here.
Up here at our station.
I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with the cheating scandal for now. Until we actually come up with a good name for the cheating scandal.
Ooh,
I'm done with the cheating scandal.
713-572-4610.
And I think I laid down on the couch. It's one of those nights where I laid down on the couch at 8 p.m., woke up at like 1 a.m., and then woke up again at 5 a.m.
Did you stay on the couch?
On the bed. No,
did you go to bed?
I mean, I straggled off the bed.
Okay.
And I feel incredible.
Fantastic. You seem energized. We're still going to talk a little bit about the cheating scandal, but you and I talked after the show yesterday. We have a show post-show meeting every day, you, me, Jonesy, and our boss, and I think we all kind of came to the conclusion like, yeah, it's still a story because people are still talking about it, including Aaron Judge, who we'll hear from here in just a second. But it's kind of tapering now because the Astros, who are the people we really care about in all this whole thing, are now starting to get asked the same questions over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's starting to turn into baseball stuff, which is fine. And that's cool. And we'll hear from Justin Verlander later in the show about actual baseball stuff. And we've got actual baseball topics. But I think the cheating scandal is starting to taper down a little bit. That said, Aaron Judge spoke out yesterday as to whether or not the Astros should have their World Series championship of 2017 stripped, and here's what he had to say.
I just don't think it holds any value. You cheated and you didn't earn it. You know, that's how I feel, is it wasn't earned. You know, it wasn't earned the way of, you know, playing the game right and fighting until the end and knowing that, you know, we're competing. We're competitors. And the biggest thing about competition is laying it all out in the line and, you know, whoever's the better player, better person, you know, comes out on top, you know, and you know, you just lay it out there, and you know, to know that another team had an advantage that, you know, nothing you can really guard against. That I just don't feel like that's earned, or you know, yeah, it's not earned.
Okay, good take, bro.
Just as a reminder, the Red Sox and the Yankees were both investigated for cheating electronically in 2017. Now there was no offer of immunity And there was no Mike Fiers to maybe flesh things out a little bit. So Major League Baseball was only defined so much.
Right.
So let's remember what we're talking about here.
Right.
This is not Mother Teresa. This is not Mother Teresa accusing somebody. This is Aaron Judge of the also cheating New York Yankees.
Yeah, and this
I'll listen to crap from other people, but save it, Aaron Judge.
Yeah, and this is where I'm at with this, Seth. And I'm not going to sit here and say I refuse to get angry over this anymore. There's some definite anger simmering in the background as to how sanctimonious all these donkeys have gotten all of a sudden. But this is what we need to do at this point. We need to tally up everyone that's been talking just crazy, crazy bleep about the Astros, mm-hmm. players I'm talking about, and talking like there's zero chance that their team did the exact same thing, right? Like talking like Cody Bellinger.
This is a sin of all sins.
Right.
Yeah.
Justin Turner, Aaron Judge, Mike Trout, Nick Markakis, who apparently wants to fight everybody. He wants to lay down beatings. We need to make a list of all these people, and we need to hang it on the wall in this studio and keep this list handy. And that list may not come in handy this month or next month or this year even. But at some point, the bells will toll for these people. And at some point, the other shoe will drop. And at some point, at least one of these teams that are represented on the Payne and Pendergast list that will be hung on the wall, at some point, the Grim Reaper is going to come knocking for these people.
The problem is now, and this is where I wonder if a lot of Astros are thinking if they'd gone back in time. The problem is now, I don't think any players are going to accept the offer of immunity to testify anymore because they've seen what the comeuppance is.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you consider the fact that I think if the Astros had all just refused to cooperate, their union is so strong, I don't think they would have been punished anyway.
There have been articles to that effect.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's the whole argument for why they had to offer the immunity. But now from a player's perspective, people are mad that Manfred didn't discipline them when obviously he can't now because he gave him the immunity.
Right.
But I think that, and because a lot of people are saying, well, Manfred wouldn't have been able to suspend them anyway. It would have been really, really hard. So in that instance, I'm wondering if, would he have been able to suspend them if they didn't cooperate with the investigation?
They just pleaded the fifth.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not, and then we wouldn't have this. It would be more like in 2017 when Jeff Passan wrote an article as the Red Sox and the Yankees were being investigated.
What did he say?
Jeff Passan wrote an article in which he said, quote, "The entire charade is patently absurd. Almost every team in baseball blurs the line of cheating on a daily basis. Executives, coaches, and assorted major league personnel told Yahoo Sports on Tuesday. Devices like cell phones and Apple Watches are not allowed in dugouts, and iPads are because MLB, blah, 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 blah." But then he goes on to talk about how it's a gray area.
Just whisks it away.
Yeah, yeah. This was in 2017.
Mm. The same Jeff Passan who got super worked up over Jose Altuve taking his shirt off in the clubhouse 2 days.
Yes,
days
the absurd ago. Thing in 2017 in his mind was that anybody cared at all about any of this.
Right.
The absurd thing in 2020, according to Jeff Passan, is now that Jose Altuve would try to clear his name of this. Yeah, it's
or remove his shirt in a clubhouse where guys routinely, you know, get dressed and undressed.
Jeff Passan's whole shtick is declaring things absurd.
Right. That's his gimmick?
Yes.
Yeah,
I hereby declare this absurd.
Superhero
off
power.
Off with its silly head.
Oh! That's where I'm at. I just want to make sure that we are keeping a proper list of all these people, all these holier-than-thou that apparently play for franchises that would never do anything like what the Astros are doing.
So, earlier we had that LA writer on yesterday who acted like it was crazy, crazy talk to wonder how guys on the Dodgers might feel about having Mookie Betts on their team.
Yeah.
But what do you mean? There's been nobody knows what happened in that investigation. What the hell are you talking about? They were already fined for it in 2017.
The reason there's a policy about this.
Yeah.
He was on the team that gave us the reason for the policy on
that. You had that guy.
Let's add that guy. Yeah.
You had that guy flummoxed. Yeah, I read his name. Yeah. We were trying to be...
What's his name? Shaker?
What's his name,
Jonesy? What was his name again? I forget. You booked him. What was his
Bill
name?
Bill Shaken.
Bill Shaken. He's on the list. You just made the list, Bill Shaken. There we go. Shaken, not stirred. There we go.
Yeah, he's on the list. Because he did. He acted like it was crazy talk that anybody from the Dodgers would have an issue with somebody from the Red Sox coming over.
It was all I could do to not drop a Seth Payne. What the hell are you talking about on him?
I was proud of myself.
Well, screw yourself.
I was really trying really hard that whole time.
You were good.
Our listeners could tell there was one point where he kind of He deflected one of my questions, and I was sitting here with my fists clenched. And I'm like, yeah. don't be old, Seth. Be old, Seth. People don't want that in the morning.
You're right. It is a weird dynamic where you remain calm and I start to get worked up like that. It's a strange phenomenon. Well, we're moving on now. It's for you, Ocho. And I tweeted about this yesterday. That's the theme song to the Jeffersons that was sung by Jeanette Dubois, who also played Wilona on Good Times. R.I.P. She passed away yesterday. I was a big fan of the show Good Times.
They just did... never mind. You know what? I was mixing up Good Times. Okay, yeah, Good Times. Good Times was...
Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, Jimmy Walker.
John Amos.
You know what I can't remember? I used to watch Good Times a lot, and for whatever reason, I can remember very, very little about any of the plots or anything of any episode.
They play it on a loop on one of the stations that replays sitcoms all the time. I can't remember if it's TV Land or one of them. It's one of those shows, though. You know there's a delineation with these shows where it doesn't matter that you're watching it on the HD version of that channel or not. It's still a square box in the middle of your widescreen.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to find or at least commission a study. Mm. If I can't find this study, I'll commission it. I would be interested about cross-cultural TV shows and their audiences, where which TV shows that have a huge white folks following are also enjoyed by a lot of African-Americans versus which ones do African-Americans tend to on average more think that's some corny white folks stuff.
Yeah. That's
and vice versa. Good Times is enjoyed by how many Caucasians versus whatever.
I would venture to say that Good Times might be the gold standard for
cross-cultural enjoyment.
Yeah, I do. I think I loved Good Times.
I bet. Well, the Jeffersons though, too. The Jeffersons is almost, cause that was that was heavily integrated because that was Jefferson, Mr. Jefferson, there living in a high-rise.
But it was a spinoff of All in the Family. They were the next-door neighbors of the Bunkers, and then it was spun off.
Wasn't that one about the deluxe apartment in the sky?
Yeah, Jefferson.
That was a Jefferson.
That was a Jefferson.
Why were you just talking about Good Times?
Because the person who sang that, Jeanette Dubois, played Wilona on Good Times.
Okay.
I'm trying to capture her resume in both song and me talking about her career.
Okay, I feel better about myself. Because immediately what I thought was why am I thinking of the Jeffersons when Sean's talking about Good Times now who's the racist? I'm the racist.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot it was 6:19 in the morning.
It was basically saying all 70 sitcoms look alike.
You had a few drinks at the party yesterday.
Feel a whole lot better.
Well, I did say she sang the Jeffersons theme song and she was Wilona on Good Times. So I didn't misspeak it. I probably needed to make it a little simpler. Here's the theme song for Good Times.
I apologize to the committee. I apologize to everybody listening. And
no
may
apology.
God have mercy on myself.
Anytime you're not getting hassled, Seth. Not getting hustled.
Before Bloomberg was there.
What? This took place. Good times actually took place in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. South side of Chicago.
Hanging in a what?
I don't know. I just went.
Hold on. I remember.
Find the lyrics.
Dave Chappelle has a bit about that. Yeah. It's hanging in a chow line.
That's what I thought.
That's
it was
right.
Chow
hanging
line.
In a chow line.
I thought it was chow line, but I wasn't sure. I think Good Times fits the bill for what you're talking about. Crossover.
Cross-cultural hit.
Yeah, absolutely. Rob Manfred yesterday met with the media, and he talked about the trash can banging and confirmed that there were players that said it took place in the postseason in 2016.
The garbage can signaling went on in the postseason. I mean, there was conflicting evidence on that point, but... in an investigation, you often have conflicting evidence, and it was my view that the more credible evidence was that they continued to use the scheme in the postseason.
Can you tell us what that evidence was?
Yeah, it was statements from players.
That, when I hear that, Seth, and I know, I feel like that's gotten sprinkled into the story, but hearing Rob Manfred reconfirm it yesterday, are you surprised he didn't strip the World Series championship from the Astros?
No, because I think, and I'm not saying this to try to deflect blame from the Astros, I think that there was a lot of it going on because they found there was a lot of this going on with at least two of the better teams in the AL that season, with the Red Sox and the Yankees. And I think what he alluded to in the ESPN interview on Sunday was he kind of made a slippery slope argument, which was, it wasn't even a slippery slope argument. It was, you, if by doing this, you set a precedent, and then the question becomes, okay, where do we stop? Because if we strip it from the Astros, but then you find out that other teams were doing it in that same season or further on down the road, not to mention, do we go back in time and strip it from various other teams that had cheated? And it's just not a precedent he wants. He does not want to be the one that sets that precedent.
The Astros are the rare team that probably wanted their crowd to be quiet at home in the postseason in 2017. Can you imagine, like, batters who use the garbage can method when they got in the batter's box being like a quarterback at home in the postseason, like doing the crowd quiet down sign so they can hear the garbage can? The other thing, Rob Manfred, of note that he said in his press conference yesterday, we mentioned this. The one thing, I don't think Manfred has handled this as poorly as he's being made out to be nationally. Mostly he's being just gut punched nationally because everybody wants the Astros to have their World Series title stripped, and he didn't do that. The one thing he did do was when he called the trophy a piece of metal, like he probably could have, you know, propped up the commissioner's trophy a little bit more. He apologized for that yesterday.
I have to say I made one mistake. At least during that long day. And that was in an effort to make a rhetorical point. I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it.
Apology
accepted. You know, nobody's accepting apologies these days. Manfred, apology accepted.
It's become our new national currency. It's like it's the most valuable thing is actually the rarest gem in America these days is an accepted apology.
That's right. That's what I'm doing.
I demand an apology.
That's what I'm doing for Manfred.
Not good enough.
Manfred, I accept your apology. Hey, we're excited to bring you, this is cool. We're getting to announce this here. The Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. We're going to spend the next 7 weeks going to the best crawfish restaurants in all of Houston, around in the surrounding areas. Let us know where we should go. Comment on our social media and use hashtag Best Bugs. It's crawfish season, so let's get down. Today at 1:45, we will unveil where next week's Fat Tuesday kickoff party is going to be, so you won't want to miss that. That'll be during the back end of In the Loop. It's a Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. So yesterday, Drew Brees put up on Instagram a beautiful picture of a mountaintop somewhere looking out over the ocean. And he said, you want to see it, Seth? Look at that. It's Andy Dufresne-esque right there.
It looks like those lush green. That's either Hawaii or the Philippines.
Okay. That's pretty good. It's good detective work by me.
Volcanic formations.
You're right. Right.
That incredibly steep. Like, it looks impossibly steep.
Yeah.
It looks like something you'd watch in a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
Where is it, Jonesy? It's Hawaii.
Hawaii. Yeah. So Breeze must have been in Hawaii.
I like to pronounce things annoyingly in the actual native tongue.
So pronounce, give it to us again.
Hawaii.
Okay. Yeah. Drew Brees is in Hawaii. he says, my feelings about the 2020 season, I look forward to the grind and the journey. Mm. For the reward at the end will be worth it.
Oh,
love
yeah.
you. Hashtag Who Dat Nation. Let's make another run at it. So Seth, Drew Brees is back for
seems like,
2020.
Doesn't seem like he's back. Seems like he's enjoying the good life in Hawaii.
Yeah, probably
if I were him,
fat.
If I were him, I'd be grinding in some stank old, moldy warehouse, you know,
doing
with rocking
chin-ups.
Music playing
yep.
in the past.
Pulling
yep.
up, doing chin-ups on pipes.
Yep, yep.
You know, from
yep.
the not on a chin-up bar like
with a wide
like rich
grip.
People do.
The wide grip is key. In Rocky III, I think it was in Rocky III. I remember when Apollo Creed is doing those wide grip pull-ups. From the time I was a child, I thought that was like the height of masculinity.
Yeah.
Was that those wide grip pull-ups, which I don't think my arm would literally fall off right now. My shoulders are so messed up.
I feel
up.
Compelled as a Rocky aficionado to point out if it were Rocky 3, it would be Clubber Lang who was doing
it. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, what did I say?
Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed
had turned babyface by
again,
then.
Again, second time this morning I've done something similar. So... Apollo.
They look so much alike.
So clean. No. That would be.
One has a mohawk.
Yeah. That is a good test. If you think Apollo Creed and Clover Lang look alike,
are the same
you
person.
Need some sensitivity damn training, and in a severe way.
Right, like, right. That's
but
right.
Clover Lang, when Clover Lang, I think it was Clover
he
Lang
was.
Who was doing the wide grip
he
ones.
Was,
yeah.
He was, yeah.
Apollo Creed wouldn't be able to do those pull-ups. Very few humans could.
Yeah. No, Mr. T back in 1982 is on the short list for sure. So Drew Brees is coming back, and that is... I hesitate to say that's the first domino to fall, but it is. I mean, he's not moving to go somewhere else, but it does create the ripple effect for Teddy Bridgewater, I think to a lesser effect, not to nearly the effect that the media wants to make it out. Taysom Hill, you know, those are the two. Teddy Bridgewater's the true backup quarterback, or was, in New Orleans, so that job's not going to be his. Drew Brees is going to be there, and Taysom Hill, who's sort of a gimmicky guy, who some people think all of a sudden could be the second coming of
maybe
poor
Cordell
man's
Stewart.
Lamar Jackson or Cordell Stewart or something.
The Lamar Jackson stuff, I feel sometimes Lamar Jackson, it's too easy to... There's one thing that people don't really get about Lamar Jackson is just how fast he is.
Right.
And like, I don't think people understand how incredibly fast he is. There's stuff that he does in the zone read game that no other athletic quarterback could do. It's crazy.
Yep.
The way he outruns people to the edge. He does stuff that most running backs in the NFL can't do. So... Right. It adds up. It's a whole different set of circumstances there.
We'll get to the teams that I feel, or we feel, we'll go through the list, you and I, Seth, that are set at quarterback. Because this is going to be, to me, this is going to be the most fascinating quarterback offseason that we've seen since I've started following free agency in football. There are some big names out there. It'll be the closest thing the NFL's had to what an NBA offseason looks like, where there could be big stars, some of the biggest stars at quarterback, on the move. So we'll go through and figure out, okay, which teams are just out of the quarterback market this offseason because they've got guys who are set. Before we do that, do you think this is Drew Brees' last year?
No, I never say that anymore. Okay. I mean, who knows? If his biggest issue, though, is I would say that going into last off, if you'd asked me this question last offseason, I was more likely to have said yes. Mm-hmm. Because last year, his arm lost something about two-thirds of the way through the season. He just didn't look the same. And you could very clearly say, okay, well, this is because of age. This is setting it. I think that Brees takes care of himself well enough to the point where he probably feels like, oh, I just need to tweak my regimen different. I need to handle things differently during the season. And next year, maybe, you know, we'll have things more figured out and off we go. So, yeah, I think he might play four more years.
Yeah, he could. The way these guys are keeping their bodies in shape these days. So, I'm going to rapid fire the ones who are out of the market for quarterback set, because it's obviously the ones who are in the market are the more intriguing teams. But I just want to see, I want to make sure we've got the list to sort of agree to here. So you stop me if I get to a team that you think could be in the market for a starting quarterback this offseason. The Jets, the Bills, these are teams that are out of the market because they've got their guy already. The Jets, the Bills, the Ravens, the Steelers.
I mean, not a high pick, but yeah.
The Steelers is what you're stopping
me. Yeah, for
Trey. Because of Ben.
He's... How many more seasons does he have left? I'm saying that it's not like they're out of the market for the quarterback. They're out of the market for trading up to get a guy.
Right.
Yeah.
The Browns, the Texans, the Chiefs. I put Denver in there. I think they're committed to Drew Lock for this year. I don't think they're going to be in the market for any of these guys we're about to talk about, like Rivers or Brady or even some of the guys who are up high in the draft. I don't think they're moving up to get Justin Herbert or anything like that. So I put Denver in there. Philadelphia, Dallas, Washington,
I don't know. Look, they've got Dwayne Haskins. For one, you're sitting in the number two spot there. And I feel like if ego or pride is going to keep you from taking Tua, if you genuinely love Tua, that's a poor long-term decision. You can trade Dwayne Haskins away for something and take your lumps from last year.
Go with the Josh Rosen thing. Flip him for a third rounder.
If so many teams love Tua that much, and or even Herbert, I don't know. It's that... You got to be, especially when you've got a new GM, it's a lot easier when you move on, you've got new management to say, okay, well, we're wiping the slate clean. Right. So I wouldn't keep them out of that market.
Okay. The Giants, the Packers, the Vikings, the Falcons, the Saints, the Cardinals, the Rams, the 49ers, and the Seahawks.
I think all those teams have their quarterback for this year. I would just say that with some teams with aging quarterbacks, whether it's New Orleans or Baltimore or any of those.
You mean Pittsburgh.
What did I say?
You said Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
They don't have an aging
quarterback. Right next to me on this list here, yeah. I think that there's a chance they draft a quarterback. Just kind of like the old Packers theory of always be drafting
sure,
a quarterback.
Sure. Yeah. So those are the teams, generally speaking, the teams that are out of the QB market. All right, so Seth, the other 12 teams I have in categories of maybe in the quarterback market or definitely in the quarterback market. The four teams that I think we can agree are definitely in this quarterback market are the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Chargers, and the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
Do you think Carolina's off on Cam Newton? Now, Cam Newton's still on the Panthers right now, but I think most people, including John McClain, who's going to join us at 8 o'clock today over the phone, say that Carolina's moving on from Cam Newton.
Yeah, and I think that at the very least, maybe they haven't made their final decision until they figure out what else is available. Right. I mean, they have to make a decision before they give Cam Newton any roster bonuses or anything.
Right.
But I think they're getting all their ducks in a row to be moving on from him.
These are the most intriguing eight teams in the quarterback market to me because we don't know what they're going to do. They could bring back their guy. They could draft a guy. Or they could change quarterbacks. The New England Patriots. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the? Do you think Brady ultimately winds up back with the Patriots?
I think Tom Brady's coming back.
Am I overshooting it by putting them in this category?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's 100%, but I think that if you look at the landscape and you look at what they can accomplish this season, while they already have a really, really good defense. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be a really good defense 3 years from now if they bring a young guy along? I don't think it necessarily will be. And I know everybody wants to say that Belichick will coach until he's 85 or so. I don't know if that's the case either. I think their best chance at winning a Super Bowl is still with Tom Brady this year with actual offensive weaponry around them. Yeah. I think it's more likely that the Patriots end up with Stephon Diggs or somebody like that and retain Tom Brady than it is that they lose Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to get better immediately is to trade for a Stephon Diggs or draft somebody.
Yeah, go get some weapons for Brady. Yeah. I would agree with it. It's a win in 2020 for sure. The Indianapolis Colts, are they out on Jacoby Brissett?
Yeah, and it's... I don't know how in they ever would have been on Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett followed that classic trajectory of, wow, look, he can do some really good things. Wow, he makes NFL caliber throws. Like, oh, wow, but he doesn't actually make people around him better.
And then November starts.
Right. Now, but he was working through an injury, too. Yeah. And it's just, I think, these are one of those situations where guys kind of fall into where, okay, probably fits whatever his projection was coming out of college, and that's what he is, but he's not somebody that's going to lead you to a Super Bowl.
Okay, so we're doing the eight teams who may or may not be in the quarterback market this offseason. We did New England, we did the Colts. Your former team, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars, yes, obviously.
You think they're in the market for drafting a guy, or maybe... I don't know that they can go out and sign anybody because their cap is such a nightmare.
Right. Let's remember the Jaguars drafted a quarterback that nobody projected when they drafted Blake Bortles. That wasn't on any mock drafts or anything like
true.
That. That was that came out of left field. And yes, I think they would. They'd be. Where are they in the draft order?
That's a good question. I would say fairly.
They're,
high
they're
up.
Ninth. No. That's yeah. They're ninth.
They're ninth. Yeah. That sounds
so it's,
right.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, so they're could, in range. That could end up being Justin Herbert.
They're ninth, and they've got ammunition from the Jalen Ramsey deal.
Yeah,
they've got two extra first rounders over the next 2 years.
And
if they wanted to move, if they liked the guy enough to move up.
Yeah.
Do you think they like Gardner Minshew enough to make him the starting quarterback?
I think they like him enough to make him the starting quarterback, but that doesn't mean that they can't like Justin Herbert more.
True.
So I think it's wide open right now. I think they could draft Justin Herbert or they could trade up for somebody. That Redskins number two spot is going to start looking really appetizing to a lot of people. And the Redskins, if they really want to roll with Dwayne Haskins, they might trade out of that number two spot and be able to basically, I think Peter King said yesterday, just hit the reset button on their franchise with the haul they could get from that. That might end up being like a... RG3 type of trade.
They're going to have to really like Chase Young to stay in two if they've got a bunch of teams trying to move up to two to get one of those quarterbacks. Am I wrong to have the Tennessee Titans in this category of maybe being in the quarterback market? Or do you think Tannehill is back and that's it and they're going
to
roll with that?
I think it's not feasible for them this year to get one of the guys they would really want to trade up that high. So I think the most likely scenario is that they're going to re-sign Tannehill.
Roll with Tannehill. Yeah. And I think
or just franchise tag him.
Franchise tag him. Yeah. Right. And I think Marcus Mariota is going to wind up being one of those guys who maybe isn't one of the top names on the market, but might be one of those names that is either a premier backup or a name that a team feels that drafts a quarterback feels like they can roll with for a year possibly. The Las Vegas Raiders, do they belong in this category of being in the quarterback market?
Oh, yeah. I think anytime John Gruden is your head coach, you're in the market for a quarterback. And it's very clear that they're not in love with Derek Carr. And Derek Carr, You know, it's funny when you start to think about where all this shakes out. If the Raiders get rid of Derek Carr, I've seen a few people project him to possibly go to Tampa. I can't imagine for the life of me Bruce Arians wanting Derek Carr in Tampa, because Derek Carr will not push the ball downfield.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, that's one of the reasons he wouldn't use Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper would be running wide ass open down the field, and Derek Carr was just like gun shy to pull the trigger. Bruce Arians is all about throwing deep.
That's why dullards look at Derek Carr and go, but he's got a 70% completion percentage.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because his targets are all within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. So yeah, they're in the market.
They're in the market, and there have been rumors of them tied to Tom Brady. So we'll see what happens there. I've got three more teams on this list of teams that may be in the quarterback market. The Chicago Bears, if an opportunity to get a guy that they feel can push them deep into the playoffs, would they punt on Mitchell Trubisky?
Yes. And I think you've got to either punt on the head coach or the quarterback at this point.
One or the other.
You got to start moving on.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, I think Nagy has done a disservice to Eric Bieniemy, because I think that a lot of people are like, Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator in Kansas City right now. Yeah. Matt Nagy was the offensive coordinator for one season with Pat Mahomes and got a head coaching job out of it and had some success with a running quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky. But I wonder if right now people are starting to wonder, like, how smart is Matt Nagy? Like, he stopped running with Mitchell Trubisky this year, and maybe they look at Eric Bieniemy and think, well, gosh, if Nagy actually wasn't all that great an offensive coordinator, he just had the benefit of Andy Reid. What do we know about Bieniemy?
I think with Chicago, Seth, they're not going to be able to. If they like one of the draftable quarterbacks, they've already fired off the gun on their draft picks, trading for Khalil Mack.
Yeah,
so they can't move up. They won too many games to get one of those guys. So then it comes down to, okay, are some of these veteran guys who could be out there an upgrade over Mitchell Trubisky? Obviously, Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers are. I don't know that either of those guys want to play in cold weather.
No, God, no. I can't imagine for or that you would want an old guy. We've seen this so many times with older players trying to play. All of a sudden, your home field advantage becomes a disadvantage in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They just lose something. They can't get enough Ben Gay on their elbows to keep it warm.
What about Cam Newton in Chicago?
No, I don't know what you can't. I don't think at this point Cam Newton can't be your answer. Because he's not healthy, you know? I mean, for the same reason the owner from the Panthers was saying that. He said, is he healthy? We don't know. And I feel like Cam Newton in football years is like 49 years old, because he's just taken so much abuse over time.
I do wonder, I think you're right about Cam Newton. I do wonder in Chicago how much of the decision-making, if guys, big-name guys, become available. Granted, Cam Newton's a big-name guy who's banged up and isn't what he was 2-3 years ago. But I do wonder in Chicago how much of it is going to be selling hope to their fan base. Look, you're in a division that has two teams that made the playoffs. You have two of the final eight teams in the playoffs last year residing in your division. So how much of it is possibly misguided sales of hope to your fan base? Cam Newton is a more sellable solution to Chicago people than Mitchell Trubisky is at this point.
You know what I would do if I were Chicago?
What would you do?
If I could limp along and become like a playoff contender all the way through the season, depending on what happens in the division, maybe you're kind of hobbling along at a 500 record, I would do with Cam Newton kind of what CJ Anderson was a couple years ago.
For bringing in December?
Just become just all of a sudden be like, all right, you know what, Mitch? Not good enough. We're going to bring Cam in. He's rested. He's healthy. And we're just going to, we'll run him 20 times a game off to glory.
Last two teams that might be in on the quarterback roulette wheel this offseason, Tampa Bay. I think they for sure are.
Yeah, 100%.
For sure.
And that's where it'll be interesting to see what do they do. Is the franchise tag deadline, the latest it's early March.
Yeah. So there's like a 10-day period from late February to early March.
We've got a couple weeks here where we're going to start to figure out, you know, all these free agency lists that get so much fun to look at, it gets a lot less fun after the tags go down.
Yeah, I think Tampa Bay to me is the big domino. Well, maybe the second biggest domino to drop compared to the team I'm about to say, but because you've got prominent quarterbacks that could be replacing other prominent. Phillip Rivers is a big chess piece this offseason, as is Jameis Winston. Phillip Rivers could be replacing Jameis Winston in Tampa Bay. That's a big swing right there. What about Detroit? That's the last one I'm bringing up, and I'm bringing it up because odds makers made Detroit and Miami the two favorites to draft Tua Tagovailoa. Detroit is drafting third.
Yeah.
They're ahead of the Dolphins in the rotation. They are in position, assuming that Joe Burrow goes number one, assuming the Redskins don't move out of two, which I don't think is a you bring up a really good case for them to turn that number two pick into an eBay situation where they're allowing teams to move up. But the bottom line is Detroit is in really good position to draft Tua if they like him. There apparently appears to be odds makers that think that Detroit really likes Tua. Do you think that Detroit could move on from Matthew Stafford this offseason?
That's a question, because I think a lot of times we get into this discussion and it turns into what should Detroit do versus what are they capable of doing. Yeah. And I think honestly with Patricia and whatever the hell the weird culture is right there, I think they could do it. Personally, I feel like it's I feel like you're not seeing for the forest for the trees in that instance, because Tua is still a projection in a lot of ways. We have to remember that guys taken at the very top, no matter how awesome they were in college, there's about a 50% chance they'll be worth anything. Where Matt Stafford is one of the better quarterbacks in the league who's been stuck in a really bad situation. I don't want, when I've got a bird in the hand right there, I don't want to, I'm not going to take the risk of both taking a cap hit and getting rid of Matt Stafford and bringing on an unknown quantity, a quarterback, and thinking that that's what the issue was. Because that wasn't, Matt Stafford is not the issue with the Lions.
I agree.
Have that part of the equation settled.
We have not gotten to the part of the offseason yet where the top quarterbacks start to get nitpicked at.
Yeah.
Where they start to pick out all the little things. Like Joe Burrow is viewed as pristine right now. Tua, for a guy who had a bad hip injury, is still viewed as nearly pristine.
I will say, as far as Matt Stafford goes, I think sometimes people get a little too simplistic when they're talking about, like, well, you can't trade him or get rid of him because it's a $32 million cap hit. Right, but it's only a net $10 million loss. Like, they're still, it's because you're saving on salary and bonuses there.
You're talking about the Lions would be saving?
The Lions, yeah. So I think I think a lot of people say, well, it's impossible for them to get rid of Stafford because of the cap hit. The net loss is only $10 million. They're going to take $30 million in dead money. Yeah. But as far as like where are we on the balance sheet, it's a $10 million loss.
Gotcha. So
For the cap.
For the cap, right. So as I just pointed out, and as you've pointed out, they've not started nitpicking at the top quarterbacks yet. Joe Burrow and Tua and guys like that.
And it is. So
Nolan Naraki's not around anymore to raise some highly eyebrow-raising things about quarterbacks coming out of college.
And I'm kind of
surprised.
Remember
that dude?
Nolan Naraki. Yeah, but Naraki used to – all Naraki used to do was print the quotes of unnamed scouts.
Yes.
And people – it like – wanted to almost literally kill the messenger there with Nolan Naraki.
Right.
I think part of that is like Naraki should have had a better sense for the fact that when you're dealing with anonymous sources, especially guys that might affect the guy's trade value to help out his own team, that they're going to say a lot of stuff. And like sometimes you got to have discretion on what you print and don't print.
What will be the criticisms of the top quarterbacks?
Just, I mean, from
like a
strictly,
Burrow to it.
Yeah.
Herbert.
I think Burrow's an interesting one because, you know, there were. He had issues with his arm strength, obviously. He had issues with his performance, obviously, before last year. You know, coming into the season, he was looked at as maybe a third-round pick at best.
Right.
But then that offense just kind of unleashed him. Last year they were doing all these seven-man protections. It was just a stodgy LSU offense. And then all of a sudden, they free him up to utilize what he was good at, which is his anticipation, his accuracy, all these things. And he was just carving teams up, but it was doing it with some really good receivers. His arm strength improved with some work on his mechanics, but it's still not great arm strength. And it's weird. I feel like scouts have started to, or at least these draft nicks have started almost just not want to deal with the fallout from talking about various guys' negatives. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about Tua and Joe Burrow like their can't miss NFL prospects.
Yeah.
Well, it's just not how it works with quarterbacks. That's not a slight against Burrow or Tua or anybody. It's just that's how it works. You never can say how good these guys are.
I'm not
be.
As wild about Tua as the NFL seems to be. Like he did not play well against good teams in the SEC. He was a big lamb killer there. He's also left-handed, which you know, these lefties.
That's right.
You know, other than Steve Young, these lefties out there.
Well, a lot of times what they say is, okay, the ball will spin differently, and then you have to worry about your right tackle because your right tackle is protecting his blind side. I'd like to just take it back to old school superstition of just I don't trust lefties. There's something off about them, these lefties.
Or do what they tried to do in schools like back in the 1700s.
Hit him with a ruler if he doesn't throw with his right hand.
Right, which is turn lefties into righties. Can you imagine he gets drafted by a team like, look, Tua, here's what we're going to do. Like turning Rocky. Like turning him away from Southpaw in Rocky 2. Like, Tua, we're going to make you right-handed.
I think that what's happened is because all of a sudden, over the last several years, there's kind of been just this explosion in where people in the NFL finally understand, oh, wow, we need to look at more traits than just the conventional things. We got to stop looking for prototypes because there's so many prototypical guys. Going back to Drew Brees, you know, and just these guys that don't look the part necessarily. Mm-hmm. But when it's their anticipation, when it's their ball placement, when it's just their football IQ, it's harder to figure those things out and separate them and project them from college ball to the NFL. But those are the things that actually matter. And I think that people see that with Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa. Whereas, you know, with Justin Herbert, I feel like Justin Herbert has more of the actual physical old school tools and the skill set that people would look at.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have all those other things necessarily. Yeah. He doesn't have the leadership. He doesn't have the intangibles. He doesn't have the quick decision making that Tua and Joe Burrow do.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.